good morning. And I need my husband someplace to give me the clicker. Dave. He can't hear. Dave, I need the clicker. Thank you. Good morning. We've had a great time here with you guys the last few days. And we told people as we came, we were just coming off of a couple weeks in Minnesota doing universities and churches back there. And so we're happy to be here this morning. The topic this morning is Costa Rica. And how in the world did we get to Costa Rica? We never thought we'd go. Had no idea. But my niece got married. And at her wedding, I got to talking with her new grandma by marriage. And her grandma was telling us how they had gone to Costa Rica on a short-term missions trip. And while they were there, they saw these young women who didn't have husbands and they had kids and they couldn't support themselves. They got back to their home in California and they said, somebody needs to start a business in Costa Rica and hire these women. Well, you know what happens when you say somebody should do that? And God says, how about you, right? And so they got back to their home in California. They remortgaged their house. They came out of retirement. They took their savings. They went down to Costa Rica. They started an electronics business in Costa Rica, and they started hiring a lot of these young women and several hundred employees. They call it Tico Electronics. They make parts and pieces for airplanes. She says to us, why don't you come to Costa Rica? Just come for a vacation. It's a beautiful place. We'd love to have you come. Well, about that time, it was our 35th wedding anniversary was coming up, and we were planning to go to Mexico, but when Dave got online to look in Mexico for tickets, they were way out of line. And so as a lark, I said, well, we've been invited to go to Costa Rica. Try that. He gets online, and $127, he gets a ticket for Costa Rica. He never even got offline. He just booked it right away. It was 200 and something coming back. And so we booked to go to Costa Rica for 3 weeks. Well, about that time, we were also heading to the University of Minnesota. And that was the first time we were there. And the campus pastor there was explaining to us their ministry and what they did. And he's talking about the universities in Minnesota. And at the same time, he says, we have a sister ministry in Costa Rica. And we went, oh, well, we're going to be going to Costa Rica. And he says, oh, I know Scott would want you to speak down there. And so Dave gets up on the phone, calls Scott. Yes, Scott wants us to speak in Costa Rica. And so we get booked in Costa Rica to speak. Well, just right after that, about the time he hung up the phone with Scott, we get a call from the airline. And the airline says, we're going to have to change your tickets. And you'll have to go a different time. And Dave's going, I can't do that. We just were booked in Costa Rica for speaking. And so the airline says, Dave says, well, we could do it if you can get us directly out of Grand Junction instead of going to Denver. So the lady goes back. She looks at it. She says, yeah, that'll be $800 a ticket. And Dave's going, no, don't change it. Don't change it. And so then she says, well, give me another minute. And she goes back and comes back. She says, I've got you going out of Grand Junction, same price. And so everything worked out. We were able to go get to Costa Rica when we needed to be there to speak in Costa Rica at the University of Costa Rica and churches and so on. That's how we first started doing creation conferences down there. This is Scott, and we met Patricia down there. She's a native Costa Rican who was kind of our hostess and our guide much of the time we were there. Well, Scott started doing the translating for Dave, and he did a great job translating. We got later on one of the days, Scott learned the programs a little bit, and we got to the place where we were running out of time, and for the translation, of course, takes more time. So Dave says, Scott, just take over in Spanish. And so we're always looking for people to train, and Scott took over right then and there. We got to go to churches down there as well as universities and public schools. We found the public schools were open in Costa Rica, and they let us bring the Bible in. They told us, go ahead and preach the gospel. That's just fine with us in the public school. And so that was a real opportunity for us. I really enjoy the kids, you know. Kids are beautiful everywhere, aren't they? We had so much fun with them. Scott came up to our our office up in Colorado and got even more training. He sees the importance of the creation ministry, and so he's very, very involved with creation ministry down there in Costa Rica. This is his family now, and we love being with them. We stay with them when we're in Costa Rica. They've had some real health issues. These guys are really, I'll tell you what, they just stick with it and stick with it and stick with it. And I really am, I'm impressed with this family. Patricia, though, what she wanted to, we wanted to go see a little more of the country. This was on one of our later trips, and so we said, Patricia, you wanna come with us? And so she and we got in her little Jeep, and we started exploring around the country of Costa Rica. Had a good time, saw some really beautiful, beautiful stuff while we were there. And this was down at her brother's place down on the Osa Peninsula, which is way down south. It's on the bucket list of anybody that really knows Costa Rica. It's one of the national parks. And we got down there, and he's got this beautiful house, and he has these macaw birds that just come in and sit right on his deck there. And we thought, well, you know what? We're going to Costa Rica. We're doing ministry there. Not every year, but it was getting more and more frequent. And it became a little more expensive. We didn't get that $127 again. But we got to thinking and saying, you know, people would enjoy going to Costa Rica to see the beauty down there. And so we thought we could combine two things at once. We can put together a creation tour of Costa Rica, introduce people to the creation ministry, to the beauty of Costa Rica, and we can also do our speaking ministry. And so we started doing that down in Costa Rica. And one of our ideas was, well, let's bring some people down and offer them the opportunity to stay on after the tour for a little bit and be involved in the ministry. So we're always looking for ways, again, to multiply and duplicate the efforts. These folks came just this last spring with us, and then we got them involved with the kids' ministry down there. I love these. See, there are dinosaurs in Costa Rica. They're still there. These kids are looking for dinosaurs in the sand, and they're making crafts and being taught and so on. Rex was actually able to do some teaching with translation about dinosaurs, so we put them to work right away. One of the other things is we meet a lot of people when we're down there. This lady here, it was an atheist for a good deal of her life, and she came to one of our meetings, and at the end she was trying to tell us her testimony. She didn't speak real good English at that point, but she's a philosophy major. But she also, she said she began to see the bankruptcy of atheism and evolution. And she had become a Christian. And so we've been working with her, training her also in ministry. Here's another lady that joined us in the ministry. This was at a university down there after the lecture. And Dave, just talking with students, we have many opportunities to talk with the students at a restaurant afterwards. This is Arturo. He was one of our translators. Great translator. He is so fast and so smooth. In fact, he's sometimes a little too fast, and people have to slow him down a little bit, but he's a great translator. This is a dental student that's been coming year after year, and she's always very interested in the creation ministry also. Another guy, Oscar here, we got to know him years ago, but he is the coordinator for our Costa Rica tours. We have another guy that we met years ago. We don't have a picture of him right now to put in here, but this young man was at some of our very early presentations down in Costa Rica 12, 13 years ago. He was very interested, and we're going, oh, good, we've got a scientist who wants to do creation teaching. And we got really excited, and the next thing we know, he's moving to Taiwan to teach English in Taiwan. And we're going, God, we don't understand this. He speaks Spanish. What are you doing sending him to Taiwan? Now he's got to learn a new language. Now we got to find somebody else to do ministry in Costa Rica. But he brought our DVD set along with him to Taiwan, started doing creation ministry there. He is now a PhD student in Israel. And he's teaching some science classes at a Christian school and going to a secular university. and taking science. He's taking a double major in physics and chemistry. Can you imagine? Not a double major, two separate distinct PhDs. This guy is brilliant. But anyway, the last time we were in Costa Rica, he just happened. You like the just happened stories? I like just happened because I don't believe they're coincidences, are they? They're God-cidences. He was in town just one or two more days after we got to Costa Rica. He said, I want to meet with you. We spent several hours with him. And long story short, he's invited us to come to Israel in February to teach creation in Israel, which has long been on our hearts as a desire to do. And so you can be praying for that trip this spring. One of the things we did not expect, this last time we were down there, we were invited to do a couple of radio stations. And we thought, oh, Costa Rica, little, you know, they'll be like most little Christian radio stations, you know. And we weren't thinking too much of it. We get to the radio station, we find out that this particular station has a broadcast volume of almost 500,000 people. It's the most listened to radio station in Costa Rica. And we just kind of came into it unaware of that. But we were able to do 2 days of interviews with them. And the second day, they live streamed it. And it went all around the world. We had done another radio program that went 3 hours on a Sunday night. We were getting comments and questions back from Argentina and Europe and Switzerland and up into the States and all around Central America. These are opportunities we didn't look for them. We didn't try to set them up, but God set them up and opened the doors. And so we're just grateful for that when He does that kind of thing. This is Aaron. He was a guide that we used on our Costa Rica tour this last year. He's a naturalist. Now, that doesn't mean he believes in naturalism, like we've been talking about the philosophy of naturalism, but he's been trained to find and interpret various natural features in Costa Rica. He's excellent when it comes to finding animals and birds and giving you history lessons and all kinds of things. Well, the neat thing about him is he's a Christian, and he's a creationist. And I'm going, wow. And so we had some real good opportunity to interact with him. We have a vision. I don't know if God will bring this about, but of doing more work with him. I would love to see more and more guides in Costa Rica trained to interpret things within a creationist viewpoint. So we're looking forward to that. The first year we had a tour, we had a naturalist guide who was an evolutionist. But he was a young man and very, very open to what we were saying, which was great because we gave him opportunity that way to hear a creation message and hopefully come to the Lord and spread the message further. So we do these tours every year. You should have gotten a brochure in that package you were given. If any of you want to come on that Costa Rica tour, it's the last part of March this year. We'd love to have you come along. We keep the numbers small. We go do all kinds of fun things. You can talk to the Simpsons if you want some more direct information. They came with us a couple years ago. We'd love to have you come. Dave's going to come. He's going to share with you some of the really unique, wonderful evidences of God's design in Costa Rica, the creatures of Costa Rica.
Thank you. We like those stories too, how we get to different places and what God is doing, and you find out that God works in a great way, and the body of Christ is not just here. The body of Christ is all over the world, isn't it? And that's what we have enjoyed so much, being involved with this creation ministry, is to see the long arm of God reaching out to his people all over the world. Costa Rica is about 20% the size of the state of Washington. It's not a very big country, is it? And yet it has it's about 1/10 of the Earth's landmass and 5% of the world's biodiversity. That's a pretty huge amount compared to the size of the country. The reason for all of that is because of its location, being one Notice you have oceans on both sides for you beach lovers, okay? It was really beautiful to see. But the oceans and what's going on around there make for interesting diversity. So what you have is mountains, you have pushing going on, there's plate movements, etc. Some of them push up the floor, and you end up with these tall mountains, about 13,000 feet. But also, these plates are moving this way, and you know, if you look at the ring of fire around the world, these moving plates also make volcanoes. And there's about six or seven live volcanoes in Costa Rica right now. It makes for interesting viewing. But fortunately, we've never really been in any of the explosion. We've gotten dusted with volcanic ash, etc. But it's gorgeous when you see the volcanic layers, etc. And all of these things can basically happen in weeks and years, not millions of years, okay? So it really works. With all the volcanism, you get very rich soil. Rich soil makes for lots of plants. The climate makes for a beautiful spot to grow about anything you want to grow, okay? And so when you look at it, because of all the green and everything growing, it's a photographer's delight. If you love flowers, oh, man. But I see design when I see beauty. Okay? I see design there. If beauty is one example of design, and that's just one. So we see beauty in the flowers, beauty in the crabs. Okay? So all over there's flowers and green and lush vegetation and interesting things to see. When you see that what you're looking at right there is actually part of a root system, okay? And it's not just one root, it actually comes in layers from different roots coming down from above and spreading this tree's base out, okay? Beautiful spot to see the different four varieties of monkeys in Costa Rica. And just to some of the design, you know, there are 12,000 species of vascular plants. Did I say this is a very diverse country? There are 1,400 species of orchids alone. For you flower lovers, I'll tell you, but one thing interesting is each species of orchids has its own fungus living in an, you might say, symbiotic relationship, right? Orchids do not have quite enough nutrients in the seeds in order to sprout, but with the fungus in it, it makes it so that the seeds can sprout. Fungus benefits, so does the orchid in their reproduction there. So I think it's amazing to see the 1,400 species, but each having its own specific fungus, okay? There are more than 9,000 species of butterflies. One of my favorite is the blue morpho butterfly. Gorgeous. It's amazing. A pilot can see this thing on the ground for almost 30,000 feet in the air. It's this intense of blue that you can actually see it. But interesting, the blue morpho butterfly is not blue. Did you know that? It's not blue. It's actually what you see on the scales, etc., are basically colorless protein called chitin. Colorless. Wait a minute. If it's colorless, how come it looks so blue? It's because every one of these scales have these ridges, and all of these ridges have literally thousands and thousands of laminae, okay? Little kind of a structure that goes down like a Christmas tree right here. Interesting. The light can come in, and it bounces around in here. When it does that, it is now reflected back with greater intensity, specifically in the blue range, okay? That is called a constructive interference. Interference with the other waves, but constructive for the one. The best, especially the blue, and it makes for that blue intensity. I like what Bill Browning said. We wrote an article, or he wrote an article for us in our publication, Think and Believe. And by the way, this is the publication you signed up for that comes out once every 2 months. The spacing of the laminae, these little guys right here, must be precisely controlled to a certain fraction of the wavelength. Approximately 1.4 million layers of these laminae are meticulously arranged with incredible accuracy on the wings. And that's an aeronautical engineer basically talking about it. It's amazing when you actually look at all this thing and say, whoa, this happens strictly by accidents of evolution, mutation, natural selection? Forget it. It's not going to work, okay? Anyhow, Mary Jo was really praying for me because when I first heard the presentation and included the blue morpho butterfly by Bill Browning, by the way, I said, when I go to Costa Rica, I want to see one. And Mary Jo began praying, Lord, let him see one up close. Well, I got one up close, and I got one closer. God answered her prayer, and I'm sure thankful for it, okay? There are 250 species of mammals there. One of the people's favorites sometimes are the sloths that move about 1 mile per hour. And that's really cranking, okay? I mean, you just barely can see this guy move. And you look at those big, sharp claws. That's not for ripping flesh. It's used for hanging onto trees and branches and hanging it upside down. And by the way, there is a locking mechanism here. So when he wants to go to sleep, he could do it hanging upside down on a tree. And he locks those claws into place, and he's perfectly set. Okay? So, amazing thing. 900 species of birds. My favorite, of course, is the scarlet macaw. This thing can live 65 to over 80 years. That's a pretty long lifespan for a bird. I like scarlet macaws, and here's part of the reason they're so brilliant colored, and they're big enough to see. We can see them. And they make enough noise that you can say, oh, I think there's a macaw around here. Okay? And sure enough, you can find them. Interesting, they mate for life. So you get a pair of macaws, they will mate for life. But one of them dies, the other one doesn't find another mate. Now, how is this advantageous for evolution? You know, if evolution is all about spreading your genes, then they should be finding mates all the time, right? But they're not. They are very committed, like we should be, to our spouses, right? All right. Now, but anyhow, scarlet macaw, what happens when they eat parasites? They get parasites and they build up. They know enough to basically eat poisonous cedar sap. How did they learn that? And not only that, if they get toxins from eating unripe fruit, they know. Go to the riverbank and eat clay. How do they learn this? See, all of this stuff, you see, goes into fitting. This is a design system. Oh, is it a mating advantage to be beautiful like that? Well, guess what? The male and the females are the same color. Right? Doesn't really help too much. So is beauty really a mating advantage when we see these gorgeous birds down there? Well, these people have studied peacocks. Peacocks, all the splendid feathers. Oh, Darwin and everybody else were saying mating advantage. Finally, somebody decided to test that. Is it really a mating advantage? They took 268 observations of peacocks, and splendid males did not win the attention of the females. They found out albino peacocks were mated at the same frequency as beautifully colored ones. So we're looking at something and say, wait a minute, it's more than just a pretty look, right? Yeah. So anyhow, but look at all the beautiful toucans, the arcaris, the different birds. Gorgeous. Now look at that bill. The bill on a toucan is about 30 to 50% of its body size. But it's extremely light, okay? It's not a great big massive thing that you whop something with. It's a light bill, only 5% of the body weight. Darwin saw toucans, and he said, oh, beautiful bills. This is a mating advantage, right? And everything in evolution's got to be a mating advantage, okay? Well, you know what they found out? That's not what that bill is for. In fact, National Geographic News in 2009, the brilliant colored bills of toucans aren't just eye candy. Rather, they play an essential role in helping the birds control their temperature. Blood is pumped up into that bill just a certain distance for the particular climatic condition. Sometimes you see the toucan with his head under his wings, and he is controlling temperature. This bill is the thermal regulator, is what it is. And it's a very sophisticated engineering system, okay? Hummingbirds, amazing. These are probably the most intricate flyers of anything, right? It flaps its wings 50 to 200 times per second. Whew, that is really zipping, right? It really is. It can. If you hear somebody say, oh, I eat like a bird, ask them, is it a hummingbird? Hummingbird will eat or sip twice its body weight in a day. And some of them may be only one times, but at least one time, the two times its body weight. And but how do they do it? Well, their tongue is actually like a micro pump. If you want to study the technology of it, you say, whoa, this is an engineered design system, how this micro pump works. And we're not going to go into that thing, but it's amazing. If you want to read about it, go to the Creation magazine. Right here, 2017, Scott Gillis. Well, wait a minute. Think about all of the wing flapping, eating all that stuff. There's a lot of metabolic and there's a lot of frictional heat, right? How do they take care of that heat? Well, it's actually the wing flap not only generates heat, but it also cools the hummingbird, okay? And so basically airflow from flapping wings helps cool the outside. The heartbeat now is 500 to 1200 times per minute. That's quite a heart rate. And respiration 250 times per minute, and that cools the inside. That all happened by accident, right? Yeah. And when we look at the fossil record, guess what? Like I said yesterday, hummingbirds are always hummingbirds. There's nothing transitional leading up to them whatsoever. Where the whole hovering tribe of hummingbirds came from remains up in the air, according to Stockstad. Okay? I love that. Okay, vipers is one of the things that indicate that, we have a design, but hey, there was a fall too, right? There's a design, there's a fall. It goes almost hand in hand. But we see the fall. This is a viper right here, and it has long fangs, okay, big long fangs. It loves to eat hummingbirds, by the way. I hate to say that, but it doesn't eat many people, so you can be safe. It doesn't eat people, but it basically it folds those fangs up to the roof of its mouth. How did it learn to do that, I wonder? All right, it sure beats biting your lip, but... Then they have special infrared sensing areas, like right in here. And they have that infrared imaging capability, and the idea they can pick up the heat of what is out there. And it works like binocular vision of picking up the heat, detects 2/1000ths of a degree or 1/500th of a degree of temperature change. This is pretty precise, isn't it? And it is so good, those infrared sensors work better than his eyes in many cases. It can get the perfect picture of what he's looking at with the infrared sensors there. We love going out in the ocean. We take people out snorkeling. When you look underneath the water, boy, guess what you see? More design. We're not going to get into that aspect of it today. I'd love to, but there's a huge amount of design. Reptiles. I like this one right here. He's called the Jesus Christ Lizard. Well, remember Jesus Christ walked on water? This one runs on water. It takes about 20 steps per second. And there are special design features that allows that to happen, including making an air pocket as he's basically running over the top of that water. And so, interesting creatures you see there. Crocodiles. Yeah. There's one spot we view crocodiles, and there's, 20, 30, 40 crocodiles there sometimes. And I'm wondering if that's the place that once in a while they throw a tourist over that's giving them static. No, but, and that's why the crocodiles are there. But actually, crocodiles eat fish. That's their favorite food, is fish. And they live in the ocean, just a little ways into the ocean, but they also live in the rivers there. And interesting thing about it, these rivers are brackish water. So sometimes it's fresh water as the tide is low, and sometimes it's brackish, salty water as the tide comes up, right? And so they have to figure out what to do with all the salt. There's a lot of salt for a freshwater creature, basically. And he has special glands that can concentrate and eliminate that salt. It's not just the crocodiles do that. We find out that there are the mangroves are special trees. They also live in that brackish water, and you can see the tide fluctuation here. But they actually concentrate the salt in their leaves. And when they get enough, they drop those leaves. So that's how they handle salt water. By the way, Mary Jo loves going into those mangrove swamps. She just loves it. And I do too, as well. There's so much to see, so much wildlife in there. One of the things we see is a heron. This is a greenback heron. This bird goes fishing. You can actually see him if there's pebbles around. He'll grab a pebble, drop it in the water. A little tiny minnow will come up to investigate that little pebble and thinking he's going to get something to eat and finds out, no, he got eaten instead. Okay, this bird is a bird that uses a tool to go fishing. Okay, pretty smart bird. He also eliminates salt, by the way, with special glands too. Here's another bird we see frequently. It's called the bee eater. All right, now, why does he get stung when he's getting ready to get into this bee, right? Well, he knows where to grab the bee. And then here's the recipe here. Instructions for bee-eating birds that you find on a sign. Once you have caught a bee, wrap its head against a branch until it stops moving. Next, rub the bee's tail against a branch to remove stinger and venom sac. Swallow whole or feed to chicks. A wasp or hornet or other flying insect could be substituted in this recipe, okay? How did they learn to do that? Isn't that amazing? When you see these kind of things working in our in the whole community of this of the ecosystem. Look at these beautiful vegetation, but what's going on here? All these little holes in these leaves? Well, here's what's going on. There are leaf cutter ants. They actually cut these leaves out. Now they're carrying them. That leaf is bigger than the ant, you know. But they're carrying them, and they're going to bring them right down into their tunnels in their anthill. And you say, what's it going to do there? Do they eat the leaves? No, they are farming. They bring in the leaves because they let it rot. Fungus begins to grow on that thing. And the fungus produce a very sweet, sticky substance. And that's what the ants like. All right, so they're farming. They're getting a good sugar crop, you might say. All right, they know what to do. Anteaters love ants. And so that's one of their biggest enemies. An anteater will eat 25,000 ants per day. So some of these ants actually make a deal with the tree. Now you see thorns and thistle, that is what? Evidence of the fall, right? It is. But even God uses the fall and things in the fall as evidence of design too. And he uses it for his glory. That's the neat part about it. And these are trees. You don't want to climb those trees, okay? You sure don't. But the ants live here, and the ant eaters don't climb trees either. At least these trees, okay? And so there's a symbiotic relationship between the tree and the ant. The ant actually pollinates the flowers of the tree. And so They've got a great deal. All right. There are 170 amphibians. Most of those are frogs. They're gorgeous frogs. And people just love seeing these frogs on these on our trips. Yeah, they're pretty frogs, but don't kiss them. All right, you don't want your Prince Charming from one of these frogs. These are called poison dart frogs here. And they actually make a very, very concentrated poison when you really irritate them, okay? In Colombia, they have probably the world's most poisonous dart frog, and just a tiny little milligram of that thing can kill 15 people. And that's what they tip their arrows with and their darts in the jungles. I don't know how they figured out the technology to get the poison off of the poison dart without killing themselves. All right, but they do. And when they do that, they found out that it worked. But beautiful, beautiful frogs out there. But wait a minute, when you think about these, and in Costa Rica, they're not nearly as toxic as the Colombia ones. But you still don't want to eat it. Okay, if you had one of these for lunch, you know, frog legs, if you didn't prepare it right, guess what? You're gone, all right? So that's not a good thing. But most people don't go to Costa Rica to eat frogs, okay? Okay, that's the plain truth about that one. Okay, well, why don't they poison themselves? Yesterday, I talked about how the DNA codes for proteins. And what it does, it tells exactly what amino acid to put in the right spot. Well, there is an amino acid, say, in your system that controls whether or not your muscles are going to contract. Okay, if there is one spot on that particular thing in that what's called the sodium gate, there is one spot on that long, long string of amino acids making up this protein. It's over 1,800 beads in a string in this specific ordered protein. What's the probability of making that exactly right? Now, if you take one of those proteins, I think it's number 1,536, okay, out of 1,800, and let's change that amino acid right there. Put a different one in it. Then you have what the poison dart frog has. And that makes it so that the toxin doesn't affect the muscles in the frog. One protein out of 1,800. How did this thing get evolved? How did that work? How many frogs had to poison themselves before they figured this out? So basically, that is a remarkable evidence of design, okay? All right, so anyhow, I talked about diverse... Oh, no way. She's telling me I have 5 minutes. Okay. I talk about great diversity. Look at this. There's great diversity even on one tree. So you've got a tree growing here. You've got a bromelia here. You've got orchids there coming out. And you have poison dart frogs that actually raise their young in there. Even in a tree, you have an entire diverse ecosystem as well. And I think that's an amazing place to go. Naturalism says all of this stuff came by what? Mutation is natural selection. And we mentioned this week already that no, that does not work. This whole idea of mutation and natural selection is absolutely wrong. Get that book if you want to read that, okay? It doesn't work as one of the top genetic researchers in the world. Okay, when we go to Costa Rica, you see evidence, great evidence of design. But you see the fall, you see the flood, you see even a dispersion. You see a biblical thing if you open your hearts and your minds to what you're seeing. When I look at that, I say, oh, what a beautiful place for the Garden of Eden. Well, maybe that is the Garden of Eden. No, it's not. Okay? But I see tremendous beauty, design, diversity here that maybe I would think about in the Garden of Eden. All right? All right? But we see evidence of the fall. And that's the answer to the question, if there's so much design, how come we see so much bad things? Well, you have to have the creation, but you have to tell them, have the whole biblical method or the message there. There was a fall, wasn't there? And that's why Jesus Christ had to come and die for us. It's because of the fall. And we see that. We see evidence of the flood. We're not talking about that today. And then the dispersion, the people after the flood were not dumb. They even had the lost wax method of making jewelry, which is still used today, okay? And they made intricate structure. These are the ancient peoples, and they made these great big spheres. And some of them are even bigger than that, 8 feet in diameter, okay? And they say, it must have been made by aliens. No, people were brilliant back there too, all right? And yeah, they can do that even with tools, what they call primitive tools. They can do that. People were brilliant. We have so much tremendous variety, diversity. And like I said yesterday, why? God's an artist. He loves beauty, and I can just imagine him just getting great joy out of creating things, including you. But I can imagine him painting the flowers out there, painting the birds, the sunsets. And when I see all this out here and say, oh, wow, I can just see God going back and say, wow, this is really good. Okay? Yeah, look, this is really, really good. But keep in mind, it might be good, but this is the destroyed world. This is the destroyed world. This is the world that was flooded over with a worldwide flood. And what does it tell me? God makes beauty out of destruction. Tremendous beauty, in fact, right? Wow, if he makes beauty out of destruction, can he do that in our hearts and our lives? He can take a life that's totally wrecked with ugly stuff, and I don't care what you did, God can change it. God can make beauty out of that if we place ourselves in his hands to do it, because he is the master artist, isn't he? And say, God, take it. I've messed up. Will you work? And he, because of the Jesus Christ dying for us on the cross, what's he going to do? He's going to honor that question, that request, isn't he? And he's going to come into our hearts. He's going to come into our lives, and he might change us completely if we allow him to do so. That in itself is something to really worship our God about, isn't it? So Heavenly Father, help us join with the people in Costa Rica. As they live in this area, we get to visit, but we get to see how you have touched these people in Costa Rica and allowed them to respond to you and your message of salvation. And Lord, help them to rejoice in you for what you've done and what you have made. And help anybody coming down to visit not see this as evidence of millions of years of evolution, but instead that you are a master craftsman. So help us to see that. And thank you, Lord God, for your creation and the beauty and the evidence that you are all around. In Jesus' name, thank you. Amen. Again, come join us, okay? That's March 23. You've got the brochure. Come join us. All right.
We're going to take a quick break. Be back at 11 o'clock for the morning service. We'll see you at 11 o'clock. Thank you.
And we will have books here. We'll also have them after the morning service for you. And then we have to pack them up. All right. That worked out. Before I say something bad about you, I better turn it off.
They know. I looked from David Kathy's house yesterday morning. I looked around.
I'm worried about. I'm sorry.
I thought the same thing. Like, ooh.
Okay, we're checking to see if it's on. Is it, you can hear it okay? That's working. Is that enough? Is that enough? Like, can you hear it? We'll be playing a violin and piano piece. I sing the mighty.
To her, and obviously that ain't gonna work.
Have a newer, we're miking the pianist.
Oh no.
So you guys make sure you sing
this
loud.
The first.
Yeah, test is the test. Don't ruin it.
It's working fine, Ed.